Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Whether it's relationships, work, or just with friends, there are plenty of things that I've done that I'll suddenly think about and feel ashamed of. But surely I'm not the only one who has this happen. So I'm going to be talking to a whole bunch of people and asking them about what they're ashamed of and how they think that's influenced the person they are today. This episode's guest is political commentator and editor for online publication Junkie, Osman Farooqi.
But upon reflection, I've been like, no, that's a cook thing, man. That's you shouldn't have done that. There was a lot of stuff I did that I was ashamed about, Sam. Probably been more candid about my feelings on my life than I have any other time. Man, this is too intense.
It's getting quite intense.
I
didn't know where we were going to go. Honestly.
I didn't know where we were going to go. I need a drink. It's like 10:30, but I need a vodka, man.
You're listening to Shame Feeder.
Hi, I'm Sam Blacker, and welcome to Shame Feeder, the podcast where we take a look at people who have some successful careers, or maybe they're doing something interesting in their life, and ask them what the hell they're ashamed of. And really excited for my guest this episode, a guy I've known for a very long time. We haven't really had much chance to catch up over the past few years, but I've been following everything he's done, from being involved in politics, in media. My mum sends me text messages every now and then just to say, Sam, Oz is on the drum. Watch it whenever he's on the panel. Very excited to have with me today, Osman Farooqi.
G'day, Sam. It is really good to have this excuse to catch up. We've been very good friends from way, way back, and we haven't spent as much time together as we should have. So what an excuse to hang out.
Oh, podcasting is one of the best excuses
totally.
To catch up with people.
And your mum is a dead set legend. Good on her.
She spends most of her time at home just watching you on the
good, as it should be, as it should be. Yeah, yeah.
So kicking things off firstly, for people who are hearing your voice and going, who the f*** is this? Who the f*** are you?
They don't recognize this incredibly famous voice. I'm a media guy, I guess. I work for a youth media company called Junkie Media. I'm the news and politics editor there. But I guess I've had a pretty varied career. I used to work in politics before getting involved in media. I ran for parliament, including where we're sitting right now in my house, was actually the electorate that I was running in before I moved here. And funny story, this neighborhood, highest vote, over 45% of people in my street voted for me. So that's cool.
In your street.
Yeah, before I even lived here. I do a few other things. We're talking about community radio before. I host a show on FBI, which is Sydney's best and coolest independent radio station.
Yeah.
And just recently, I've become a founding exec member of a group called Media Diversity Australia, a new not-for-profit designed to make Australian media a little bit less white.
Which would be good. Very white.
Yeah, we're trying to get you guys out of the way.
We can get in the way a fair bit. It's why, like, whenever I try to do anything, like, because my perspective of media has always been like, I'm in media and I'd like to do something to, you know, help with the diversity that isn't just me getting out of the way, because then I lose a job.
No, and that's not, like, that was tongue. It's not what we're trying to say. There's all sorts of things.
Absolutely. But, like, I struggle with what else I can do. That's why I think I was working on a podcast like a year ago, and I called you and you were like, maybe not quite that way. I'm like, of course, yeah. That's so stupid.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a step beyond what most people do. Like, you know, finding your friends and other colleagues in the industry that do come from diverse backgrounds and seeking out their opinions. That's a good start, and you're onto it. So better than 99% of what else is going on.
Good to know.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Let's focus a bit on Junkie for a bit. So how long have you been with Junkie now?
Just about 12 months in my current position as a news and politics editor. And before that, I was freelancing mainly for Junkie, but also for a few other places. It's a really fun gig. Like, I'm really lucky to be in the role that I am. The way that the media kind of landscape has shaken itself out in the last few years, there's, you know, Junkie's been, was created 4 years ago, and I think it's become, I don't want to sound arrogant because, you know, I've only been there for a quarter of that time, but I think it has become a pretty staple part of the media diet of a lot of young people in Australia, particularly kind of progressive young people. So to be able to write news and political commentary and analysis and break some stories for that audience that is really interested in what's going on in Australia around the world is a privilege. And it's cool. You know, we have more than 1.5 million people that read our stuff every month. And the idea that I just get worked up or passionate about something and then build like an argument for it and people are like, that's really cool, I hadn't thought of that. That's, yeah, it's a cool position to be in.
Absolutely. And I read a lot of the articles that I end up seeing posted online from you and from Junkie in general.
Awesome. Thanks for those clicks, Sam.
No worries. Always willing to give you that extra click.
It pays the bills.
Do I get some kind of payback for that?
We'll talk about that offline. Yeah.
Okay. So you enjoy, like, you know, giving people an alternative way to think. But what about the actual organization that you work within? What do you love so much about it?
Yeah, it's a really good question. Because I've worked in different kind of industries. I worked in politics for a bit. Mm. I worked in engineering. Even never again, please. But what I like about, I guess, the digital media industry and Junkie in particular is. But don't take ourselves too seriously. Like, it's a professional company with, you know, it's growing and it's, you know, we're hiring new people all the time. So we're a real company. But we pride ourselves on an ethos that is about, I guess, representing, like, acting the way that we want. We project our values, right? So the work environment is one of the best I've worked in. Everyone is kind of my age or, you know, thereabout. A lot of young people. And it just creates for an environment that's really fun and you bounce ideas off people and sometimes we'll just stop working for a couple of hours to argue about keeping up with the Kardashians. And like that's a fun environment to be in if you're a young person interested in like cultural stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So that's the work. What would you say is the thing you're most happy about with your life at the moment?
Am I not allowed to say work?
I mean, you can. Is it work?
No, it probably isn't work. Like I think why I said that is because I do feel pretty lucky at work and I have a lot of fun there. But I think the stuff that I do outside of work that's kind of connected, which would be FBI, community radio, and this new media diversity initiative, I'm probably really happy about because for the first time, I've kind of found a balance, I think, between having a professional job that I really like, but also having the free time to engage in these other pursuits that I find quite rewarding. And so community radio, like you've got experience with it, you understand how important it is. Mm. I love it because I'm, again, lucky to be in this position where I put stuff to air that all these other people have done. So I take credit for the hard work, which is a great position to be in. But also I get the opportunity to kind of train and help skill up a new generation of young media people. And that's a cool feeling. Yeah.
What I find really interesting. So I recorded a few of these now. And you mentioned a word that has come up a few times previously.
Kardashians?
No. Freedom.
Yeah, right.
The freedom to sort of be able to do the things you enjoy.
Yeah.
Is that sort of something that's pretty important to you?
I think so. Like, I think for a lot of people our age, man, like, work is tough. And I know so many people that aren't lucky enough to be able to work in careers or jobs that they are really passionate about, or they're working absurd amounts of hours, paying absurd amounts of rent, and the ability to engage in stuff outside of work, whether that's socially or, you know, organization, is not there. And so for me, when I say freedom, I guess that's what I'm talking about. It's the luxury of having a job that's good and, you know, pays well enough that I can do and engage in these other pursuits.
Yeah. And I guess in perspective on the other side then, what don't you like most about your life at the moment? Is there anything?
Like I'm absolutely not trying to do this kind of, oh man, life's so perfect.
I'm not saying that. You answered the question more. I asked what you loved most first. I'm curious.
It's good to kind of force me to think about it a little bit. I think the flip side of being the kind of person that likes to engage in these external pursuits is that they take up an enormous amount of time. And even though I like them when I'm doing them, I do get to some point where it's like, oh, the whole weekend went by and I haven't really done anything fun. And that happens like more commonly than I would like. So maybe sometimes I think I've got the balance right, but probably reflecting on it at the moment, I think I might be overcommitting myself. And one of the problems I have is not being able to turn down exciting opportunities. And one or two exciting opportunities is cool, but then when you say yes to like seven of them, like what the hell are you going to do with your time? Are we allowed to swear, by the way?
I opened with
cool. The fuck am I going to do with my time?
Okay. So look, that's, and I say this before, like in this podcast in 10 minutes, you can't really cover off all that
about
someone. But that's right. Would you say that's sort of the brief overview of you?
Yeah, that's me. That's actually a good way of summing up me. I've probably been more candid about my feelings on my life than I have any other time.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Well, next.
I'm getting emotional.
Next, let's get even more candid. I want to talk about what you're ashamed of.
Yeah, I've been waiting for this. I know that this is the whole point of the podcast, but I was hoping that we could just keep talking about the fun stuff and we didn't need to get to this bit. Thought we're in a good rhythm, man. Let's just keep talking about life and work.
Nah, it's time to talk
shop. Keep up to date on the latest episodes by subscribing to Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, and all other apps.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So Oz, we've talked, like, you know, if the worst thing that's going on in your life is that you're too into doing too many things and you run out of free time, it sounds like things are going pretty well. But let's talk shame. What, if anything, would you say you are either ashamed of or maybe were once ashamed of?
Man.
Take your time with this.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Look, I'd like to say that I'm the kind of person that doesn't get ashamed. I get ashamed. And I think the things that I'm the most ashamed about are things that I did in a particular point in my life that maybe then I didn't think were like problematic or bad things to do. But upon reflection, I've been like, no, that's a cooked thing, man. That's f***ed. You shouldn't have done that. And I guess there's a particular period of my life where I was doing this stuff like daily. And that was when I was involved in student politics, University of New South Wales. Student politics is a pursuit. It's kind of like Revenge of the Nerds, but it's not a good pursuit. Everyone involved in it is the kind of person who was picked on in high school. And then you get to university and you kind of find this space that you can run shit, right? Mm. And you become the cool kid. And it's wild because a lot of revenge fantasies to live out.
You get to be in control.
Basically, exactly. It's like people have just created this alternate universe where young, drunk student idiots wield power. I don't know how it's legal to exist. It shouldn't happen. Anyway, that's a period of my life where there was a lot of stuff I did that I was ashamed about, Sam.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you want to go into any detail?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to, but I mean,
you're awkward if I came here, like, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. Time for me to go.
Yeah. Look, I'm just trying to, like, there's just, I guess at a high level, just, and maybe I'm saying this, I'm prefacing my comments in this way to maybe add some context to the listeners, just so they don't think I'm as bad a person as I might come across in this situation, because it's a real, like, no holds barred environment. Like, people, it's a ruthless environment. You do, like, okay, let's talk about shame. I'll give you some specific stories in a bit, but like, everything you do a day-to-day level is kind of shameful. You pretend to be friends with people that you hate because you need to interact with them, or you pretend to be friends with people that you don't really hate but you don't really like because you need them to vote for you or to support you. You lie about going to university events, whether they're reviews or classes or whatever, to get people to vote for you. You pretend to speak other languages to get people to vote for you. Turkish students will come up to you and say, oh, Osman, that's a Turkish name, are you Turkish? And you're like, I am if you'll vote for me.
Wow.
So there's, like, you know, that's just like the daily, like, base level of which like everyone kind of operates at. And at the time, you don't think about it because you're young. The only thing that's important to you is like winning that election or becoming president of the student union or whatever. And the ends totally justify the means. And it's only now when you look back on that period and you think, that is bad because A, it's not how humans should operate, and B, the lessons that it teaches people who often end up working in quite important, serious political roles are very, very, very bad lessons.
I've had some run-ins with student politics, and I think most people have been to uni probably have had some sort of, in, like if you haven't been in it, you've seen from the outside and you're like, what the
this
is going on?
This is terrible. Who are these insane, insane people?
But, I mean, again, you can, like, there were people I knew from student politics who I knew before they got involved in student politics, and then they got involved. It's like, well, I know what you're normally like. But things have gotten a bit different.
It does. No, it flicks a switch. And there's stuff that, like, you know, there was some low-key examples, even though your face, you looked horrified when I was telling them to you.
All I was thinking was, this is amazing. I'm looking for, like, hooks.
Yeah, I want the grab. The intro, I want the grab.
Like, the quotable.
Osman Faruqi pretended to be Turkish to get votes. That's not good. Hey, I probably can't run for parliament again.
I think, look, after what I've seen you say about all the various parties, I don't know if you could anyway.
Very, very true. There was, I guess the one moment that lingers the most in my mind as a bit of a stand up for this. So, you know, it's kind of a boring process getting preparations for elections. So I'll try and condense it as make it as exciting as possible. You're running for election. The first step is to like get your nomination forms signed. You know, that's the very boring bit of paperwork. And there are different factions involved and you have to make deals about what faction you're going to work with and who you're going to do and who you're going to screw over. And I was in a particularly, I guess, powerful position at this point because we were the faction that everyone wanted to work with.
Yeah.
So in that situation, the thing to do is to basically let everyone think that they're working with you, right? Where in reality, you can only end up working with one group.
Yeah.
But you take the process down the track as far as you can with everyone till it's like the close of nomination day. And then just before the close of nominations, you tell everyone else, oh yeah, by the way, that paperwork that I said that I was going to do because we were going to do stuff. Like, we haven't done that because we're not going to do stuff. And then two things happen. I mean, one thing happens, they scream at you or they throw beer at you or they punch you. Luckily, I never got hit, but like, you know, things like that did occur. That happens. And then either they are screwed and they can't contest the election, which is the outcome you want, basically, because this is how student politics works. It's not a clean fight to win an election. Part of the battle is knocking out your opponents before the ballot box even opens.
Wow.
The other thing that can happen is that they do scramble to get their nomination forms in. They do contest the election and they contest it with such a furious bitterness because of what you've done. It leads to like the worst week of your life.
Wow.
And like, you know, that was a tactic that I participated in. I knew that it was kind of cooked at the time, but I justified it to myself because everyone else is doing it. This is how you win elections. This is how I was trained to do it by other people. And it's how I trained other people to do it who came after me. And when I look back on it now, I think I kind of have a 50-50 take on it. 50% of me is like, that's really bad. You should never do stuff like that. But the other 50% of me is like, yeah, it was student politics, you know? Yeah.
Everyone
was really hurt. Everyone, you know, it's all a bit of a joke at the end of the day. Mm. But that might just be me kind of wanting to defend my actions.
Because also then, as you said, you then trained people to do it.
Yeah.
It's affecting those people that go into potentially be in politics.
The cycle is continuing, man. Like, I've got some good friends of mine whose younger siblings, who was at university with involved in student politics, and the younger siblings got involved in student politics, and I went and trained them and kind of taught them my stuff and would give them advice on things. And they went through the grinder and came out, like, very unwell in lots of regards in terms of their mental health and emotional well-being, because it can do that too. And I feel more ashamed about that, to be honest. Like, just felt so guilty that I'd encouraged and supported these people to go through this process that I knew would have that impact on them, and then it did have that impact on them. But I can't take I mean, it's not entirely my responsibility, but it just is a sad thing to see that inevitable conclusion occur.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, so
This is getting heavy.
It is getting heavy. you know, it's the heavy part of the podcast. okay, so you corrected yourself then. Would you say that the thing you're most ashamed of is getting other people involved in student politics?
Yeah. The more I'm thinking about it and the more I'm talking about it, I think it is. I think maybe it's that, and it's the way that you lure them in, because I mean, you want to stay optimistic, right? You want to think that there's a way to make people's lives better by getting involved in the process,
yeah.
Whether it's, you know, campaigning for cheaper textbooks on campus, or protecting staff from getting sacked, or departments from getting closed, whether it's, you know, being that being a channel into environmental activism. Like, there's noble pursuits that politics should be about. But by the time you're at the other end, you know that those noble pursuits don't really exist, and if they do, they're balanced out by all the shit that people have to deal with. But you still feel responsible to keep the new generation going.
Okay.
So you grab first years, wide-eyed, bushy-tailed, excited. They finally move from the country to the big smoke. They're at this big university, 50,000 students. This is amazing. I can change the world. And you're like, you can change the world, guys. You can change the world. It's like yeah, it's like the guy in Oliver Twist. Fagin, is that his name?
I think so.
Yeah, it's like Fagin. Like, you're just luring these people who have, you know... It's actually worse than Fagin, because what Fagin does is he takes, like, street urchins who have nothing going for them, and he gives them a home. He gives them food. Sure, they rob, whatever.
Yeah.
But, like, that's cooked Industrial Revolution London. I'm like the reverse Fagin, man. I took good people, and I made them bad.
Wow.
Yeah. Man, this is too intense.
This is getting quite intense. I didn't know where we were going to go. Honestly.
I didn't know where we were going to go.
When I was coming into this, I'm like, I don't even know. Like, Oz seems like a really confident guy. I don't know if he's going to have anything specific. I mean, we'll see what happens. But, wow. Do you then spend much time thinking about that?
I have up until pretty recently, and I think the further I've gotten away from my involvement in that period, the less and less I think about it. But there's lots of, like, markers that remind me. Like, so many of the people that I was involved in student politics with have gone on to work for senior politicians. In some instances, they've become elected representatives themselves. And that's kind of horrifying for me to see, because I know what they were like in terms of the way that they operated, using these same kinds of tactics, the kind of the paucity of intellectual depth that a lot of them have.
Wow.
And now they're representing people all around Australia, different states and territories. And that those things serve up as reminders, and they make me think about how bad that whole situation kind of is.
Okay. So, I mean, that's triggers for the memory now, but when do you reckon you first started feeling bad about the whole thing?
I think probably it was the generation, like, immediately. We're talking about generations in student politics. We're talking about years, basically.
Yeah.
So I was the president of the UNSW Student Representative Council for 2 years, and the couple of years after that, I was involved in student media, so I was still kind of involved. But there was this kind of, I think it might have been 2 years after I'd stopped becoming the president, when there was an entire new generation coming through the system, and I felt responsible for, you know, bringing them in.
Mm.
And they weren't people that I'd worked with before, so they hadn't seen the machinations of it. And so I think I felt conflicted at that point about wanting to bring them in, because I wanted to keep our, like, political legacy in the student union. But I also knew that this might be bad for them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I guess the other thing is, when you're in there, you know, is there, and you know, everyone, and you said everyone does it. Do you think, or did you even feel, when you maybe started feeling ashamed about it, was there any pressure to not feel bad?
Yeah, totally. Like, I wasn't born into this, you know, vacuum of, like, just knowing how to do stuff. Like, I was mentored and taught and trained by people who did this better, and by better I mean worse than myself. And, like, you know, there's not really people that reflect on it, and that's, I think, is a disappointing thing, because you're not given the chance to grapple with those moral dilemmas. If you feel morally about something and you don't want to do it, well, then you lose, and that's it. It's game over. You're out of it. No one cares about you anymore.
Okay.
And I think the culture around it, as we've been talking about, is the most insidious aspect to it.
I find that really fascinating.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've taken a look at who you are now.
Yeah.
Taken a look at what you're ashamed of. Next, I want to see if maybe we can tie those together and see if they've maybe we can get some positivity out of the shame.
Sure. No, we definitely can. I've learned some lessons, Sam.
Good.
I've learned some lessons.
For extra content, check out the Sam Blacker page on Facebook.
Okay. So we've talked about everything you got up to in student politics, how maybe you look back on that and don't feel super great about some of those things.
I need a drink. It's like 10:30, but I need a vodka, man.
But where you're at now is pretty great. Like, you love the job you're at. You say, like, you've always able to take on more things, even if you're running out of time to do it. How did how you felt about everything you did in student politics lead you to where you are today?
Yeah, I think the more I'm thinking about it, there's actually a really direct correlation between what I got up to then and what I do now.
Oh, yeah.
And so, I fell into that trap of that classic, what everyone hates about politics in this country, that person who spent their time at university engaged in student politics, went on to work for a political party, worked for different MPs, worked in parliament as a camper for a bit, ran for election. I did all that stuff without very little real world experience. And the wash up of it was that by the time I hit sort of like 25, I'd been involved in politics for like 7 or 8 years. 8 years. And I'd campaigned and I'd fought the internal fights. I'd done the Machiavellian stuff where you leak stories about people that you don't like. And yeah, just all that sort of stuff. I graduated from student politics to real politics. And the takeaway from me was I was 25. 25 is not a point where anyone should be bitter and cynical and burnt out about what they're doing. But I was incredibly bitter and cynical and burnt out about what I was doing because I noticed more and more that all those things that we were talking about student politics had translated to real politics. Mm. And I'm not talking about my actions. I'm just talking about the way the rule book works and how everyone does stuff. And I didn't want to do that anymore. I didn't feel like I got involved in politics because I cared about things like climate change and refugee policy and fighting for marriage equality. And I cared about all of those things. And I spent less time fighting for those things and more time doing these kinds of bullshit, you know, tactical plays.
Yeah.
So I decided that I didn't want to be that kind of person anymore. I'd done it for long enough. So I quit. I got out of politics and started writing, became like a freelance writer. And the more I've done that and the further away I've gotten from my political involvement, the more I've seen that as the right call because I'm not having these moral dilemmas. I'm not thinking about, look, maybe the end does justify the means, but the means are still f***ed and they're going to impact me at a selfish level, like my emotional mental health quite negatively. And that did take its toll. And so now I look back and I'm really glad in some ways that I went through that then because it's made me realize what I enjoy doing, what I don't enjoy doing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was there anything from that though, maybe from that period of time that you're ashamed of, the stuff that you did, is there anything that you still use in everyday life? Not necessarily the negative stuff.
Oh, the negative stuff,
that period of time in your life. Politics.
I think the thing that I learnt the most is how to, like in student politics, you'd call it how to manipulate people, but the skills are also transferable to just like managing people and working with people and interacting with people. So if you know how to open conversations, make people feel comfortable, make people want to open up to you, you can use that for bad, which you do in student politics, or you can use that for good. And I like to think that I use those kinds of skills that I've learned in a bad environment in a better way, like it kind of just in a day-to-day sense and work, but also in like one thing that I get invited to do quite often is speak to like young media students at university. And I feel really sorry for young media students because they feel really passionate about media. Like they care about it, but they're going into an industry that does not have a lot of opportunities. And so a lot of them are quite desperate to hear as much as they can. And a lot of them are quite shy and anxious as well. And that's something that I've noticed in the industry, even though people think media personalities are always so extroverted. I think that's what we do for work. But like in our reality, it doesn't necessarily always translate, you know?
Like, my on-air persona on my radio show is, you know, I'm loud, I'm shouting, excited. At home, I'm just watching Netflix.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, like, you know, we do stunts. Like, you know, we had Nitro Circus come to Nowra. And I had a motorbike do a backflip over me.
Jesus.
And that was for work.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be doing that in my day.
Exactly. But so I think because I've gone through, like, you know, I was involved in student media and a lot of those kids are, you know, aware or around student politics. So I can connect to them in a way and I can talk to them in a way that makes them feel really comfortable. And then I think that, you know, they open up so they might be pitching me stories that they might not have before. I have a lot of kids email me for advice and things like that. And I think the main thing that I learned that I've tried to be used for good rather than for evil is my ability to kind of build relationships pretty quickly. I think.
Okay. Now, two more questions.
Sure.
Firstly, For those interested in getting involved in student politics, yeah. what would you say?
I think about this a lot as well, man. Yeah. Like, I think about whether I would tell people yes or no. I think I would tell people to not get involved in student politics in the sense of, like, joining a young version of a political party and joining a political faction and running for student elections. I would not encourage people, I think, to do that now. But I would say to them that there are lots of other ways and more productive ways to fulfill. If you've got ambitions to do activism, like if you feel like, you know, you want your university to go renewable energy or you want to fight for women's rights on campus or you want to make it a safer space for culturally diverse people, there are better ways to do that than through that process. Like, get involved in the Environment Collective, which will hold actions and have weekly meetings and you'll eat delicious vegan food and meet cool people and you'll have more of an impact on your campus life and you'll learn more about how to achieve social change than you will getting involved in, like, formal student politics.
Okay.
Yeah.
And final question. Having looked at how, you know, all of that led to where you are now and how you have so many good things going on, like, you know, you've got a job you love, a lifestyle you seem to be enjoying. Would you do it if you had the time over again?
Even though I just said that I wouldn't encourage people to do student politics, I wouldn't change what I did because I felt like, as I explained, it's led me to where I am now. And I think if I hadn't done it, I might have either had a romanticized notion about it and wanted to do politics later on and then gone through that process at a more annoying point in my life.
Yeah.
Because the good thing about being 18, 19 is, like, you can do dumb shit and, like, you move on, right?
You get a do-over.
Exactly. Doing dumb shit when you're, like, in your mid-30s, nah, you kind of at that point.
Yeah.
So I learned those things and it's made me kind of the person that I am and it put me on this path. I learned an enormous amount of stuff. So I regretted some of the things that I did and on balance, it was a pretty toxic environment. But I learned so many valuable skills in terms of building relationships, building consensus, organizing, you know, articulating ideas, arguing about politics that I just think are useful in life.
Yeah.
So there's very little that I would change.
That's cool. And would you say also that the, you know, how you feel about it all sort of affected how you became the person you are as well?
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely made me want to be... like, to not be that person that the end justifies the means. Like, I didn't want to get to a point, like, in my head, okay, I'll get to this point and what I do in between doesn't really matter. I've now taken stock a bit more and it's like, you just got to enjoy life, man. You got to, if you're not enjoying what you do every day, you don't, this is going to sound morbid and it's going to, like, for someone in their mid-20s, it might sound a bit weird, but you don't know what can happen in life, right? You never know whether it's something tragic or just losing your job or something crazy happening or whatever. So you just got to take every day as it comes and not worry about dealing with bullshit because you might get to a better point at the end. I think you've got to try and find a place where you're happy doing what you do every day.
I don't think that was that morbid.
Okay,
and
cool.
And I'm glad,
cool,
because as you said, that's morbid. I'm like, I was going to wrap it up here. We're going to end on something very morbid. No, that was, like, I find that fascinating. And look, thank you so much for talking with me this morning. It's really, really fascinating insight into you, actually.
Yeah, I went more candid than I was expecting. I think just because I've known you for so long. Like, if it was someone else, I probably would have had some more guards up. But, you know, you got the full Oz.
Yeah.
But thanks for inviting me on your podcast, Sam.
No worries. Thanks for letting me sucker punch you with friendship.
All good.
Thanks for listening to Shamefeeder. Keep up to date by subscribing or liking the Sam Blacker page on Facebook.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.